All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck Knicks? How's it going? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. I'm recovering. I'm recovering from a few days on the road. What day is it? It's Thursday for you. You must be thinking, why would it take so long? I don't know, man. You know, you get out there. We did some great shows. I think I talked about it the last time I was on the mics here. The last show, where were we? In Tarrytown. That was interesting. Nice place. Nice little town. Kind of upscale-ish people. All adults. But for some reason, out of all the shows, that's including Boston, Providence, and Portland, for some reason I had, there was someone in the crowd. I couldn't get a take on it, who it was, but there was someone in one of the balconies that was causing some trouble. It went on and off for a while. I mean, I handled it well. It was funny, but apparently the cops had to come, and you know, you're on stage, you don't even notice this stuff. But aside from that, great show. Hands on. Did all right. Claire O'Kane opened for me for the full run. She was great. And I don't know. I just, a lot of driving, a lot of talking, a lot of eating, but ultimately, you know, getting up on Sunday morning to record the show for Monday, and then Sunday night being jacked up, driving from Tarrytown to JFK at, you know, 10 at night, staying at that TWA hotel. That's crazy. Have you guys looked that up? Do you know what it is? It's the old TWA terminal. I remember that terminal as a functioning terminal when I was a kid. It's sort of a mid-century modern masterpiece architecturally, but it's kind of a trip because they left it primarily intact. It's a very practical place to stay if you got to catch a plane in the morning, which I did, and it worked out. But very odd when something that was something else becomes a hotel. Even the place, where were we? In Portland. That was an old newspaper building. But, you know, that's just the frame of the building. I mean, this is, they've got it all set up like, you know, where you check in, it's the ticket counter. It looks like a terminal, a terminal lost in time. And there's that very famous walkway that used to go, I think, from the front to the actual terminals that's still intact. You've seen that in a lot of movies in the old TWA terminal. I don't know when it was built, but it was kind of a trip, man. It didn't feel quite right. But it's really stunning to look at. You feel like you're in some sort of, you know, time machine or some sort of spaceship from an era where spaceships might have looked like that on television anyways. But I recommend you check it out. And I'm not getting a paid plug, and I can't even say it was an amazing hotel necessarily. It was good, but you're in an airline terminal, and you're sitting there. But I mean, it's better than a Hilton or something. But it's really kind of wild to be, you know, in that structure, especially if you have some childhood memories of it from flying into Kennedy at any time. I don't know when. I don't even know that I registered it being gone. That Trans World Airlines is no longer. I mean, that's what my family used to fly, TWA. And there I was in a hotel room in the terminal. And when you walk around, you get out of your room, it's weird because, you know, it feels like, you know, people are on their way to their planes or something. I don't know. But it was an experience. Today on the show, I talked to Todd Glass again. He's been on three times in the past, back on episode 32, 245, and 499. It was on the episode from 2012 that Todd came out publicly as gay. He's hosted his own podcast for 12 years. The Todd Glass Show. His Netflix special is called Act Happy. He's now working on a new show, Todd Glass, The Event of a Lifetime. And always great to talk to Todd. I thought we might have had a minor issue, but we resolved it. We talked about it. You'll hear it. So there was a little of that old school WTF vibe of are we okay? But Todd's always, you know, he's going. He rev it up and go. He starts and here we go. But I love him and I've known him for a very long time. So we talked to him. I've added dates, some new dates on my tour here. So listen up. There's a pre-sale going on right now for all of these cities. Asheville, North Carolina at the Orange Peel on August 8th. Nashville, Tennessee at the James K. Polk Theater on August 9th. I'm back at this place. Louisville, Kentucky at the Bomhard Theater on August 10th. And I hope I don't bomb hard. Lexington, Kentucky at the Lexington Opera House on August 11th. Santa Barbara, California at the Lobero Theater on August 22nd. San Luis Obispo, California at the Fremont Theater on August 23rd. Monterey, California at the Golden State Theater on August 24th. Iowa City, Iowa at the Englert Theater on September 5th. Des Moines, Iowa at Hoyt Sherman Place on September 6th. Kansas City, Missouri at the Midland Theater on September 7th. Tucson, Arizona at the Rialto Theater on September 20th. Oklahoma City at the Tower Theater on October 3rd. Dallas, Texas at the Majestic on October 4th. Houston, Texas at the White Oak Music Hall on October 5th. San Antonio, Texas at the Empire Theater on October 6th. Boulder, Colorado at the Boulder Theater on October 19th. Joliet, Illinois at the Rialto Square Theater on October 24th. Skokie, Illinois at the North Shore Center on October 25th. And Grand Rapids, Michigan at GLC Live on October 26th. All of those shows have a pre-sale going on right now with password all in. No space. All in. I'd do it in all caps if I were you. No space. So it looks like Allen spelled with an I. General tickets go on sale at all venues tomorrow. Go to WTFpod.com/tour to get links to all the venues. I'll have a couple more dates to announce next week. Man, I didn't even realize I was going to be this busy. Jeez. Oh, I also wanted to mention my old pal, Brian Scalero. Brian Scalero, the very funny, naturally funny, one of my favorite guys to watch, Brian Scalero, has a special called I Don't Know Who I Am Either. It's out now. You can get it on digital video on demand platforms like YouTube, Vimeo, and Amazon and Apple TV. Brian Scalero, I Don't Know Who I Am Either. Guaranteed to get some laughs. Funny man. Oh my God. I finally watched all the Oscar movies, and I watched the Oscars, by the way. I did. I watched them a few days later. I didn't think I was going to watch them, but I watched them. I thought they were very enjoyable. Got some laughs, got some tears, got moved. It was fun seeing the movie stars. It seems like there's a kind of a new old guard happening. You know, when I was growing up, you could see all the old actors from back in the day, and Nicholson used to sit up front, and you always liked seeing him. But now maybe that's going to be Robert Downey. I don't know. There were a lot of people who weren't there because I don't think the spectacle of it is as enticing as it once was if you don't have a horse in the race. But it did feel like there was a community and there was a vibe between everybody. And it was a pretty good time. And obviously, a lot of the movies were pretty great. And I was happy when Gosling sang the Ken song. I thought it was all pretty funny. You do find out or figure out or see who's really funny, because it's tough to be funny as a presenter. And the people that are really funny as presenters, you're like, oh, those are the really funny people. But I did watch, finally, Past Lives, and I found it to be a kind of amazing, singular movie. Because I've noticed this a lot with lately, that, you know, when I watch something like Reservation Dogs, you know, I get a sort of window in to a culture that I didn't have before. And the reason that I sort of can take it in with a certain amount of nuance, because it's played against the sort of American cultural reality. You know, Reservation Dogs is about Native people who live in this country now and how they're living, and the speed and spirituality and humor of that particular community comes through because it's here. And I can kind of see it through those eyes because it's shot through those eyes. Not unlike Rami Youssef's show, Rami, and the American Muslim experience, because of his character who is not tormented, but certainly straddling two worlds. You know, it gives me sort of a way to sort of integrate the experience of an American Muslim, not unlike Past Lives, which is really a love story that doesn't end tragically, but it's a heavy-hearted love story. But and it doesn't have a necessarily happy ending, but it is a thoughtful and emotionally deep ending in a very unique way. And the cultural differences kind of play out with a Korean woman who lives here, whose family immigrated to the States when she was very young, and her best friend, a boy who was in love with her when they were 12 when she left, and the sort of like the kind of weight of that love that continues on through his life and turns out to have continued on a bit through hers, but cultural differences in terms of how people deal with emotions, ambitions, and the sort of trappings of cultures, that being the American Korean woman and the Korean man who still lives in Korea, and the experience of what becomes of someone when they live here and become Americanized and marry an American guy, and how that plays against someone who never left their homeland in a kind of like, I wouldn't say it was fraught, but an unrequited love affair. It was really a stunning movie, and it was a very sort of, I wouldn't say a sparse script, but you know, it was very lean and shot beautifully, and scenes were really allowed to play out with full emotional weight. I can't believe I waited this long to watch it, and I can't even tell you why I did. But what a rich film and a movie that I'm still thinking about 2 days later. Okay, Todd Glass, strap in. Love this guy. Talked to him many times before. Todd Glass is currently putting together the live show, Todd Glass, The Event of a Lifetime. You can see it as part of the Netflix Is a Joke Festival on May 12th at the UCB Theater in Los Angeles. Go to toddglass.com for tickets and to check out how you can help with crowdfunding for the show. This is me talking quickly. Todd moves, man. He moves fast. This is me and Todd Glass. We had an experience outside, and you know, I kind of held my hand half out, maybe for the shake, and then he said, "Are you a shake? Do you hug? What?" And we hugged, and then we had a discussion about it, and he said that the hugging's new to you,
not new, yeah. But when I was not, and my mom was very affectionate, very affectionate.
That's what does it.
Funny, I think I'm calling it. That's what did it. Oh, I thought I was going to say it was my problem. It's her problem. When I met a group of friends, like after I graduated high school, I met some, like I hung out at a bar all the time.
Yeah,
I met some friends there, and they were just all more affectionate.
Yeah,
they were huggers. Like, yeah, you know, even at like 20, 21 years old.
Yeah,
so I became more affectionate through that group of friends that I had.
I think my brother, like, you know, I don't mind hugging, but I don't, you know, I rarely surrender to it completely because that makes people uncomfortable. You know, it's a polite hug. You don't want to just give in.
Depends who it is.
Right. But my brother was always a huggy guy. He actually, I don't know if you remember when we were kids, there was a therapist named Leo Buscaglia. Buscaglia?
Yes. He
Buscaglia?
Was good. Yes, yes.
And my brother.
The power of hugging.
Yeah, something like that. Power of hugging. Was it? I don't know. Leo Buscaglia? Was it Buscaglia or whatever?
We're saying it close, but that guy was, I knew young, he was a brilliant guy.
Right. Well, my brother was a kid younger than me. He must have been in junior high, and it just really resonated with him. So we had to really deal with my brother doing a lot of hugging. And it was probably the right thing to do. I think that because I didn't do it, he's more well-adjusted than me. Because my mom was not a hugger. It's uncomfortable.
Well, by nature, people are pretty affectionate, I think.
I do. I think so, too. I you know, I question it, but I think it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just had a lot of, that's why,
go ahead.
Everything, my instincts are always wrong. So whatever I'm going to talk about.
What are you talking about? You're at the top of your game.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. I agree, actually.
Yeah. Me too.
Whenever they go, oh, now today a guy, you know, they have to say, oh, men can do this, or, you know, they tell God. All they're doing is letting people do what they did. No one's running over a kid when he's not crying and going, you know, you're allowed to cry.
Right.
They always cry. They always like pink and blue and black and boys and girls. Yeah. Like, they always try to make it like we're trying to shift the dynamics of what people are. We're saying, no. And with some factuality, we're not saying, we're just saying, let them do what they already fucking do by nature.
Yeah, don't. don't be, well, yeah, don't question it. Don't be hypervigilant. Don't think you're suggesting it. Don't wonder whether, well, I mean, you should wonder. I don't know. We don't have kids. What are we even talking about?
Yeah, I have nieces and nephews.
Oh, that's nice.
You don't have to have a heart attack to give open heart surgery.
No, that's true.
That didn't even, I don't know if that made sense or not, but I said it and it really stopped you right
now. Felt good. Felt good to say. Now, I was trying to remember. I mean, you haven't been on here a long time.
It's been a long time.
You did the first one, which was a big one, made global news. and then I think you came back in 2014, if my research is correct. Now, let me remind me, because we have an opportunity here maybe to do an old store, old style episode. We had a problem, right? Do we have a minor problem?
Oh, okay.
Okay, I remember it was...
You mean like, it's Steve Feinhardt's birthday?
It was a misunderstanding of something. Yeah. Was it there or was it Sarah's rooftop party? I think it
was Sarah's rooftop party.
Right.
Oh, you know what? Okay. You know, you can really, you can do, look, you helped me do something that has changed my life forever. I don't care if it's 12 years ago. It has impacted me.
Right.
And the way you guided me through it was, you know, I it was, you know, I can feel little tears coming on right now. You guided me through it beautifully. So look, you really cannot, you can't do any wrong really.
But, right.
Oh, now I feel bad for bringing it up. But, oh, I love saying this expression. I don't know where I got it from. Thank God, or thank the nature, that things don't have to be the end of the world to bring up. Because if they did, I wouldn't bring this up.
Right.
It's not. But you can bring things up. And I thought you were slipping into this, you know, I love you guys. You know, I love you guys. Well, for that to be, like, for something to be shabby chic, you have to have the chic. Mm. That makes sense, and I'll tie it together.
Okay.
So to be I know you love you guy, you got to say I love you sometimes. You got to say nice things so then the cold is, it's not a, you're not a parody of yourself.
Well, it feels like maybe I took something for granted.
Maybe you took me for granted. I'm like, Mark doesn't know how funny I am. I told Steve, I go, because he'd be a little more nervous around me. If he saw my show, everyone thinks they know what you do, and not that you have to gain respect from people by their artistic integrity or what they do, but in this business, it's something. So, but yeah, I forget what you were doing, but I was like, oh, Mark, you know, it's okay to say, you know, nice things too.
Yeah,
and good to see you.
Oh, right. I was,
I love
you. There he is. I was in party mode.
Is that what that, oh my God, is that what that is?
I mean, I like, there's a lot of people there. I'm running around.
Yeah.
I'm saying hi to people. I'm charming, a little defensive, you know, and maybe I didn't connect with you with the attention necessary.
Yeah. I said something and you go, is that what you practiced on the way here to say? And I'm like, oh God. But again, you sent me a very sweet Steve Fine Arts. I said, don't say anything, please. And then he did.
Putting it on the radio.
You sent me a very kind, I think a voice memo or a text.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very sweet. It was very sweet.
Well, I felt bad. I mean, like, I'm just one of these guys that can very easily rub people the wrong way. With a snarky or snappy or sarcastic thing,
and also, by the way, sometimes that fucking makes me laugh so hard.
Yeah,
it's not. All I'm saying is, come on, say something sweet once in a while. That way, you're not a. I call it, you know, I love you guy. You know those guys. You know, I love you. You know, I love you.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's been
crying?
A while.
Yeah, yeah,
it's been a while told me you love me, but show affection. So then the harshness is a funny.
Well, I think what happens with our community, especially when we've known each other for fucking 30 years.
Yeah,
35
but
years.
Don't put it on everybody else.
No. But what I'm saying is that we're all friends, quote unquote friends, because we're in this community and we have a shorthand and we do know each other kind of well. But rarely do I spend time with a lot of the comics. But you feel this familiarity. It's like Jews, you know, like, oh, it's a Jew. I know a Jew. And, you know, they're not great. But... But, you know, so the familiarity is it doesn't take into consideration, like, this guy's got a whole life, you know, he's going through whatever he's going through. You know, be nice first and then hurt them.
Yeah. And the yes. But it was still good to see you in that party. I get nervous. And look, we all get uncomfortable at those parties. But I'm holding you accountable.
I get it.
Like you get nervous. It's, you know, your adrenaline. I get bit happy. Like when I see a lot of comedians, I get bit happy.
Yeah.
I also hid from a lot of people that I like. Yeah, I get to see people over in the other corner, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to go over there. They'll make me nervous. So,
I see people. Like, I think a lot of that night was spent, like, you know, should I just say hi to Owen Wilson? I don't know him. And that was a good part of it.
But it's good to be here now.
So what has been going on? I mean, did I see you at the Golden Globes? Did they cut to you, like, several times for some reason?
They did. Jim Gaffigan invited me last minute. So I was at a great table. Again, very nervous. We ended up sitting at the Ted Lasso table. I didn't really know anyone there except John Hamm, of course, because, you know, he's been around.
Comedy guy. But
he's a comedy guy.
What was Gaffigan up for? Best stand-up?
He was delivering or presenting best stand-up.
Oh, who won that?
You know, I forget.
Yeah.
I forget.
Why wouldn't you?
Ricky Gervais.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Ricky Gervais.
Wow, okay.
So, can I say something about Ricky Gervais real quick?
I'll talk shit about comics.
Well, sure. I'll make it quick. It's not just Ricky Gervais. It's all these guys that go, you know, Ricky Gervais, if you put any pushback on him, if you don't agree with what he says, and this is a lot of guys, they go, and I know we've talked about this before, they go, if you don't like what I say, then just don't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
But that's what comedians do. I almost want to trick someone like Ricky Gervais and go, hey, Ricky, because I don't believe he does this, but I could trick him. I really believe I could trick him. Hey, I know detectives don't use the word trick, but it's sort of what they do. You go to someone like that, you go, and you know the answer, and you know they're going to get defensive. You're just going to apply their answer to say, please give everyone else here's what it is.
Yeah.
If you go, Ricky, I know you don't believe in God,
right?
But why can't you let other people believe in God?
Right.
He'd go, I do. It's just the way I feel. I don't, you know, if other people want to go believe in God. Well, it's the same way with people that argue with what you say. Yeah, maybe there's a small slice depending on what you're doing.
Yeah.
But when it's just they don't agree with what you say, they want to argue it, but the majority of them don't think you should be stopped from doing it.
Yeah.
People are allowed to argue with what you say. You're not just saying this stuff for the people that agree with you, are you? So it always is funny that, like, comedians are, and I'm a comedian. We're cancel culture, if you want to look at it. This is stupid. That's stupid. This is stupid. But the minute someone thinks what we do is, and they go online to react, I think comedians would be so much better off if they said it cleaner. It might make them look stupid, but it's cleaner than going, you can't say anything. Here, or just say this.
Here.
Go, you know what? I liked it when we were the only ones that could say something and other people didn't have the chance to react. Yeah, now because of social media, they react. I don't agree with the outcry all the time, a lot of time, but people have a right to do what we do in different platforms.
Here's a good response.
Does that make sense?
Sure, of course. It's the idea of consequences, but they've always been there. They're just not as immediate and from thousands of people. But there's always been, you know, it's not like, you know, you're going to be punished or anything necessarily. But, you know, people have a right to a different view.
Right.
And people have a right to say, like, you're terrible.
Yeah.
And they have a right to say you're wrong. But, you know, they don't have a right to say you can't say that necessarily.
Right. And most of the time they don't.
Yeah. No, but that's the implication. Yeah, is that corporate interests will respond to grassroots actions and then deny people employment because it's too hot, right?
Right.
But that doesn't really happen. But the thing is like when somebody has a reasonable reaction that is contrary to what I believe, a lot of times I'll be like, nah, I'll think about it. I'll think about it. I understand your point, and I'll think about it. And then I mostly go like, nah, you're wrong. And then no.
Well, I'll tell you, I have that happen.
Yeah,
I've had people say something I don't agree. But the thing is, I give it a listen because sometimes
sure.
I do agree
yeah.
and change willingly.
Yeah, right. That's right.
I think the people that put up the biggest fight of like, you know, you can't say anything anymore. I think they're making more compromises than anyone. And I think that's why they're getting angry because some of the verbiage that they've taken out of their act, they haven't done it willingly. They've done it because I can't say that word anymore.
The bigger problem is that it becomes their whole act. It's now a hook.
Well,
it's kind of hacky. I hope it don't get canceled. It's like a hack line. You know, is that your tagline? Oh, look, right. I'm in trouble.
Yeah, it's like they branded themselves sort of a warrior. But anyway, I talk about that enough. But anyway,
do you talk about it a lot?
I do. I'm obsessed with it because it just cracks me up that I see so many comedians that are, you know, I wish they'd all go out one night and perform like it's 1985.
Yeah.
Go out one night. Do it. You know, there's an expression, you get out of your own way. Everyone knows that. Can you get out of your own way? Well, I think that is half to say, can you say, oh, my God, I was wrong. Go out and perform like it's 1985 and then tell me if you think you can't say anything anymore.
But
remember those rules?
Sure. But I think like back in the day, you know, I was tagged a blue comic, Right. So, like, you know, if you worked blue, you had your own issues with getting work, you know, and then, you know, a lot of us who were bluer than others, it was sort of like, well, I'm not going to change it. I can't change it. It's like, how am I going to take that? It's half my act or whatever. But now, like, it seems to me that people can find their own audience. But the bigger problem is that there are people that support an ideology of, you know, fuck woke, fuck liberals. And they've decided that they are comedy aficionados. So there's a tribal element to it that has decided what comedy should be. And it's not great. And what happens is more sensitive or thoughtful acts get sort of plowed under this tsunami of, like, you know, what the fuck is that? That's woke bullshit. And they don't. And then you get these, you know, these fairly a lot of brilliant people doing great comedy who don't have the wherewithal to push back against this wall of ideology. And that's what bugs me. And I try to push back, and I do. But then all of a sudden, you know, it goes from pushing back on ideology to, like, why are you shitting on so-and-so? No, I'm not. It's just the ideas. You know?
Right, right. And, you know, I never like to really. I don't mention names a lot because, you know what? Even some comedians. By the way, whenever anybody goes after a comedian, it's usually not because they had a joke about the mall they didn't like or a dog. Most of the time, overwhelmingly, come on, we can still disagree and have an honest debate. Not right. You, but the people that disagree with me. You know, I'd like to see one comedian when they go, oh, you know, they're not arguing because you had a bad joke. It's usually a social issue that you're talking.
They've associated you with a point of view.
Yeah, they have a social issue you disagree with.
Yeah, that's,
you
know, the problem.
So people are allowed to combat that, even if they're wrong. And by the way, I say this every time. You could not have great comedians if they did not ignore some of the pushback. But not all of the pushback. If you listen to all the pushback once in a while, you'll go, oh, okay. You know, really, when we talk about what it takes to be a good comedian, at least I think, we're talking about being a human being and evolving as you're older.
Yeah, but there's a lot of, you know, comedians, a lot of are animals. They're monsters, and they always have been, and it's okay. But I think the bigger problem is that, you know, now what's equated with success is, you know, clicks, selling out arenas, you know, the numbers, you know, this momentum, that winning. And to me, that's never been about really what great comedy is about. Like for example, you're doing some of your best work. You do it the way you want to do it. You have people that enjoy you. But is there a part of your head that says, I can take this new show to an arena?
No, it's not my goal to take it to arena, but I also, and I feel the need to say this, I also think there's great comedy happening right now as
we speak. Of course.
Of
totally.
Course. Probably the same, if not more, than there was even 30
when we
years
started,
ago.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. You just have to have the time to sift through it. We've talked about this
right.
before.
Have we?
But yeah, we've talked about, like, that when you're younger, there was a lot of crappy music when we were younger.
Yeah.
But we're remembering the good stuff. And when you're younger, you have time to sift through it. So when you're older, you go, oh, there's no good music anymore because you don't have time to sift through all the bullshit. When you were 17 or 18 or 19,
I think that's true.
You had more time. Like, same thing with TikTok when it came along during the pandemic. Look, I did not love TikTok because I had to. Oh, I guess I got to do TikTok now. I always tell my friends, if you don't like it, don't do it. You're not going to have success. I was jealous of the formula. I don't like the crowd work, but guess what? Perspective is a fucking important thing. And I don't like the crowd work on TikTok. But if that's the bad part of it, the stand-up part of TikTok, look, we had song parody guys, we had ventriloquists, and we had magicians. And right alongside of that, there was brilliant comedy being done.
Sure.
And the same thing is now. Alongside some of the bad crowd work guys, there are brilliant young comedians.
It's just very easy to go unseen.
When?
In general. Yeah, there's so much.
Yeah,
there's
much. But you know what? People probably felt that way in the 90s or the 80s.
I don't want to drift into sounding an old guy. But I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of this, you know, it's great as you get older is, like, it really shouldn't matter to you. Like, it's very hard to sort of look at the world, you know, as it is now and then look at what we come from and then try to be, you know, intelligently critical. And then you start to realize, like, this is old man stuff. You know, I'm just.
Well, I stay away from it like like the plague. You know, I don't want to slip into that, and I don't believe it. I don't do it. I'm not trying to ingratiate myself to youth. I'm already mad at them for what they're not going to accept.
Yeah.
I've seen patterns. I've been on the planet a long time. There's going to be something that this, what they're fighting for now, this group of people, 20 years from now, something new, or 10 years is going to come along, and they're going to go, ah, that's ridiculous. So I'm not trying to ingratiate them. I just don't want to get into that, you know, that old, that people say when they get older. Yeah. I think I like doing comedy now. I love, Twitter wasn't it for me. I'm not a wordsmith.
Yeah.
You know, and I know you could post videos on Twitter too, but TikTok, Instagram, when that came along, I was like, oh, I'm jealous of it. Like, I would see funny things on there and creative things, heartwarming things, kind things.
Yeah.
And during the pandemic, I was like, oh, I want to do this. Yeah. I want to do this.
I did a lot of the Instagram lives.
You did Instagram
lives during the COVID, Like, I was almost running a morning show. I'd get up and I'd get on for like an hour and a half.
Oh, you
and,
did?
Oh, yeah. I'd have, I had a pretty good crew of people that were like, they're just all at home and sad, and they and they really got to know me. But then some of them thought they knew me too well. And then it gets a little weird.
You know, I thought the pandemic, look, it's not, it wasn't worth having it, but made me, in a weird way, it strengthened my stand-up for this reason. You know how, like, we're having more of a serious conversation now. You know, we're laughing, too. But when you do a podcast, you know, and it's very, very, very silly, we don't need an audience. Look, audiences are the best thing about comedy.
Yeah.
But there can be an exception. There can be the negative part, too. And when we're doing podcasts with our friends and we're laughing, we don't go, how do we know it's funny? There's no audience.
Yeah.
We know internally sometimes. Yeah. So I performed stand-up. I liked when they weren't even putting the – remember when they started putting some people on the
Zoom,
so you could hear them laugh. I didn't need it. I was performing stand up and having a ball doing it, using my, could say, podcast sensibility.
Yeah.
And I would get done, and I remember once told my sister-in-law, I go, man, I just had a really good show. I did a 45-minute show. She goes, good question. She goes, how do you know? I go, well, I'm not trying to trick anybody. I know when the words flow out of my mouth, right? When I'm trying to reference or making a comparison and it comes to me. So I thought it came out of, I came out of the pandemic maybe a little better stand-up from doing so many shows with no audience and just trusting my instincts.
I did zero.
You didn't do any?
Nope. Yeah. Didn't do any parking lot shows, didn't do any Zoom shows.
I didn't do any parking lot shows.
I was relieved. Like, I was sort of like, man, maybe I'm all better. You know, maybe I... Maybe I don't need to do this anymore. But as soon as we could start doing it and other people were doing it, I'm like, oh, fuck, here we go.
Yeah.
But so how's your life been?
My life has been really good, you know, and you know, I like, there's a lot of days where I go, thank, you know, I don't want to say thank God anymore. Do you ever have that thing, or just whatever, thank the universe that I came out.
Yeah.
It's still awkward. There's still shows where if I don't feel the crowd likes me as much as I think, I won't talk about that part of my life.
Yeah.
And I'm like, my brother said to me, he goes, wow. And I knew why he said that. It's like, it's funny, like, my parents were open-minded and most of my friends were open-minded, but I still kept it inside for so long that it's so personal.
Yeah.
And I think, hey, if they're not liking this joke about, you know, how to how people, their houses are too bright or, you know, whatever, they're not going to want to hear that I'm, you know, that I'm gay.
Yeah.
So if I'm not doing well, I won't talk about it. But my life is good. I was in a relationship for a little while.
Well, that
broke up after like 12 years. And then I was in another relationship for five. And then that was really ended. We're still very, very, very close. But my life is good. I'm enjoying stand up and, you know, I'm just enjoying being out there. There's some, out of the pandemic, I was hoping this happened, and I think it might have. Maybe some shitty clubs ended up closing. Now, that doesn't mean a great club's going to take its place, but it's the opportunity for a shitty club that had a stronghold on a market. So there's some really new, good comedy
clubs. So where are you working usually?
Well,
you just go all the clubs.
I'll go to the, you know, when I'm not
Denver, opening, Minneapolis,
opening for acts like, you know, whether I travel with Gaffigan or Sarah or, you know, over the years, Tosh or, you know, that is, let me be picky when it comes to the clubs I want to.
Yeah.
So you go to the clubs that you really like, you know,
like which ones?
Comedy on State is like just
Madison.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Vermont Comedy Club.
That's good. Ceilings are a little high.
Vermont Comedy Club. They are. But you know what? It's still suck. Yeah. They love comedy.
Yeah, because they're up there. They don't get much.
And they love it. And the owners love comedy.
Nice guys.
Yeah.
It's a married couple, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
They're good
exactly.
people. Yeah.
There are. They love comedy. And the
what
way
about Denver? You like Denver? comedy works?
I didn't draw enough people to enjoy that experience. So what would happen is I'd have the audience I drew, but then they fill it
with
and
stoned people.
I wish it was stoned people, you know. But Denver, you know, it's a well run
Minneapolis.
Club. Minneapolis, Acme, yeah, all those places go to. It's a shabby chic club, but probably the best crowds on the planet. I just got back from the Comedy Addict in Bloomington.
I used to do that every year. I didn't go this last year. I don't know why.
So you know, I'm having a good time, and I'm out there doing stand up and loving it. I'm not seeing anybody right now, but I'm enjoying life.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And I'm enjoying life and being on stage and being
your folks
my
are good?
True self. Oh.
Why?
My dad died when I was very young, but that's it. My mom just died about 8 months ago.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
And, sorry.
How old? She was 80, but she had a lot of time. Her family lives forever. She got cancer, fought it, and then it got the best of her.
Oh.
That was
hard, right?
That was, whew. She did it in hospice with all of us there, with her dogs in bed with her. But, man, that just, woo.
That's heavy.
Yeah. It really just did.
My parents are winding down a bit.
Really?
Yeah. How old are you?
I wasn't ready to have my, I'm 32, and I'm going to be 33 in May.
That's tremendous. See, yeah, you're a little young for have that happen.
Yeah, very young. Oh, age. I don't feel it, except when I have to say it. I feel good. I might feel better than I've ever felt.
I only know it when I see pictures of myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, when I look in the mirror, I'm like, oh, you're good. You look good. You look as good as ever. And then I see a picture of myself. I'm like, I'm a weird old Jewish man.
I think it was like 2 weeks ago. Yeah. I left the house. I felt great.
Yeah.
And then I said, I saw myself in a mirror. I had to now search for another mirror to get my confidence back. I'm like, wait, this mirror over here, the mirror in my house is the best mirror in the world. Yeah. Whatever it is, it's the lighting.
You have a relationship with it.
I didn't purposely make it
not.
A good mirror.
But it's your mirror.
And then I'd rather have a shitty mirror at home because that way it's not the mirror usually, it's probably the lighting in that room that you're looking at yourself in the
mirror. It could be how you're feeling that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I'm
healthy. Good.
Yeah. I feel great.
Isn't that good? Really, you look good.
Thank you.
So now, I watched the trailer for the show. Mm-hmm. It's a big show. Yeah, I mean, you've got an orchestra, I believe.
Well, I probably like a lot of comedians. I know Mitch Hedberg had jokes about this. I really just love stand up. I did 10-year-old Tom, you know, I voiced the principal on that show, and they let me ad-lib a lot. That was a great experience, but that's not the norm. You have to follow lines, and I don't do great with that.
Yeah.
Unless if they're bringing me in, they go, we love Todd Glass, we want to see him.
Yeah.
Okay, then I will audition, but
sure.
If I don't want my manager submitting me for anything.
Yeah.
But if they call him, we'd like to see him, we understand, then that's great. But I love doing the stand-up, and I thought, well, why not turn your stand-up into, like, treat that, like, the way, you know, just make that into something. That's what you love. That's what you want to do. And I had been touring, you know, after my Netflix special, I had a band in there. And then when it
How
was...
How big a band?
I had a 4 or 5-piece band in there. And then after that, I started to do it on the road a little. And then I had the band bits. And
you tour with the band?
I tour with one person. I had to. I go, Todd, you either need to stop doing the show or at least bring a guy named Cam Kavinsky, who has a comedic background.
Yeah.
And he's in the band as the keyboard player, but he's also there more for his comedic, his comedic ability. And then I'll get a local drummer. But for this show that I want to do, I want to do like a New York run. I want to, you know, I have an ice cream truck after the show outside. The saxophone player plays in the street while they're waiting in line. Like, I take advantage, and it's not just a line. I get very passionate when I talk about it, of every single second that I can entertain the crowd. And it's not just a line. If they hear the saxophone player from a block and a half away, that means I started entertaining them a block and a half away.
Yeah.
And if they're in bed...
They may not know it, but they're being entertained.
By me.
Yeah.
And at the end of the show, when the ice cream truck pulls up and they take... also cookies and hot chocolate home to pack it in the cup, and they can. I'm still entertaining them at the house, and they can go on my website and get a playlist that I say, "Hey, you're home with the hot chocolate." So I take advantage of every single.
Now,
second.
How far do you go with this with this idea? Like when the next day when they shit, are you like that's my cookie?
I I should. That's still my cookie. That's my cookie in there. Hey, are you shitting out my cookie? But the guts of the show is a stand-up show. That's why this year I toured without the band because I want that element of the show.
But am I making it up in my head? But it isn't on the video. Isn't it a big band?
Yes, the band. Well, here's. Yes, it is. It is a. I feel like I'll tell you what I do. So a lot of the bits are comedian bits. So I'll have like a saxophone, a trumpet, drums, keyboard. And maybe, yeah, that's it. Like saxophone, trumpet, drums, and keyboard.
Because the vibe of it reminded me of, you know, when you watch those weird specials that aren't real specials that are shot, you know, with the old guys like Jerry Lewis or somebody mm-hmm. in Vegas.
Yes.
And there's just a full fucking orchestra up there for no reason other than, you know, for him to, you know what I mean? Occasionally they kick in.
Yeah, they all had them before. And from seeing comedy from that era, I like that style. I don't have an old style in my act,
right.
But I do like the big band. Because you know what? When they're playing, like when the crowd's being seated, in some venues, that's an hour. Yeah. Like the night in that's my true. Show has begun in a big way.
Oh, so you seat people.
I seat people. Remember, did you ever have that when you started?
Yes.
You'd have to seat people and do stand-up?
I was a doorman at the Comedy Store.
Oh, so you know that world.
Yeah.
But the bands, I don't send the whole band out, but I got a keyboard and drums. The minute the doors open up, they're swinging out there, instrumental.
Yeah.
And then there's the band bits. It's very hard to explain, which someone said that's a good thing. If it's easy to explain, that means a version of it's been done. So there is a 4.5 minute, that highlight reel that you saw. It's on my website, Todd Glass, The Event of a Lifetime. So, you know, I decided about 2 years ago, I want to do a run in New York. And the big part of the budget is, I feel like I have to explain this, is presenting it with the robust budget. You know, you can't spend $10,000. You think, oh, I'll spend $20,000. No, it needs to be not the funding of Hamilton, but when a play opens up in New York, they have to put some. It's like $40,000-$50,000.
So you involve a set designer and everything.
You know what? That's funny you ask that. I told my manager, I go, I don't need someone, a director. This show, I've been touring with this show for a long time. It is a well-oiled machine. I go out on stage now with a different attitude than I had years ago. Like, I'll get back to what you just said. Like, it used to be if 10 is the best audience in the world, 7 isn't bad. 7, they've done a lot right. They're worth fighting for.
Right.
And if I'm tight, I can win them over.
Right.
I'm not trying to win a 2 out of 10 over. I'm not trying to win that low over. They don't like me. They're not going to. But I go out on stage every night. I just got back from Philadelphia and did some shows presented by Next in Line. And every night I go on stage like I have something to prove. I'm tight as fuck right now. And the band and everything about
it. You leave room for riffing, right?
Yes, I do. I do. In my tightness, I do leave room for riffing, and I enjoy doing that sometimes.
But the show's got pieces.
Yes, it has a lot of elements, and it's the band, and it's what happens before the show and after the show. So now we started something on Seed and Sparks, a crowdsource to go. So, by the way, some of the high-end items are like naming the band after you.
Right.
You know.
Oh, okay.
Name the band after you. Hey, if you're, you know. Or
for a night?
For the night.
Yeah.
But it's pretty high. That's a high ticket price. Yeah. But there's lower ones, too. Yeah. But the high one is name the band after you.
Yeah.
And then, or business. I go, I can't name a business. I'm not calling them the Joey's Pizza Band. My friend goes, if they gave you $10,000, would you? I go, yeah, I can make it fun.
Yeah, sure.
How about I have it a Joey's Pizza Band, everybody?
Sure.
You know, and I go, the band knows their name in all 10 of them. But we're the Joey's Pizza Band.
But that's interesting because, you know, in a small market, that's like paying for advertising. I mean, the way old television works.
That's why my friend goes, let people name their business. Someone might go, hell, we'll name our business. We'll also get some. So, you know, in short, there's not that much to talk about that, except it's on Seed and Spark, which is a really cool, a crowdsource for like indie films
and
creative things. But, all I do, Mark, is lay in bed and dream about this show in New York City. It's already something. And I know if we bring in the proper budget, we can turn the show into something.
Like what venues are you thinking?
Well, I'd like to do it in a venue, no food, but drinks.
Uh-huh. Tables?
The guy who directed my special, he said something. I go, he gets it. And he did. He goes, I know what you're talking about. Not tablecloths on the tables, tablecloths to the ground. Now, that's only one thing, but if he got that, he got everything. And he did. Yes.
Will you explain that? Long tablecloths?
Well, because if you watch old, like really fancy high-end jazz clubs, the tablecloths go a little further down to the ground. It's for some reason, it's sort of a sign of like, and I would like to do it in a place that serves drinks.
Like a dinner club? What are you thinking?
You know, I could turn any club in New York into it.
Yeah.
But,
Are you thinking a theater?
Well, I don't want to do a theater because I want tables. I really want
like one
tables.
Of those city winery joints.
Well, I don't know. More think of like a high end jazz club in New York City.
Okay,
you know, one of those places where
jazz at Lincoln Center.
You might not know the
Dizzy's
band
Cafe. No, they have that.
I don't. Oh, I thought you were just. No, I don't know any of these places.
No, that's the kind of place it is. They got the jazz club at Lincoln Center. They have jazz at Lincoln Center. They used a big hall, Rose Hall, I think it is. But then they have a club, a jazz club upstairs.
How many does it hold? Roughly 200, 500.
200, 300.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
That's what I want. And
you could do it there.
You know what? You know what I told my manager? We got to go to a place that's excited to have me. Because when they're excited to have you, they make the little changes. I like people to be comfortably packed. Comfortably packed. And you know, this is not the only reason I want to do it at a place where there's tables and drinks.
Yeah.
No food, just drinks. Is because it's more comfortable to watch a show. If you have to go to the bathroom, you can go to the bathroom. Excuse me, pardon me. Excuse me, pardon me.
It seems close to a variety show. You're the only act. Yeah, have you considered?
You know, it's hard. The reason I try not to explain it, because I've learned over the years, no matter how good I think I can explain it, they'll get it better when they watch the highlight reel, Todd Glass, The Event of a Lifetime. That's on my website. But it is a huge chunk of it is stand-up. I'd like to be really clear with that. If you're craving stand-up, I know what it's like to crave stand-up. Before I did it for a short period, I went out to see it. It's going to give you what you want. Then there's a lot of band bits. And it's like a little bit of stand-up.
See, I'd like to see you have, like, I'd like to see you do a duet.
What do you mean?
Do a little singing.
I do a little singing.
But, you know, like, because I watch sometimes on clips on Instagram, I watched Sammy Davis Jr. and Tom Jones. And there's that, you know, like when Dean Martin on his show would just have Jackie Gleason come out.
Yeah.
And they'd sing a little song.
Well, I do some singing in the show, but it's mostly stand up, but I do singing. You know what I always say? I have a joke about how the old crooners, it didn't matter if their joke got a laugh. I set this up early because if they didn't get a laugh, they just went, they would be like, bah, 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 punchline, these little town blues. Or the band would come in, bah, 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 bah. So I do that like five or maybe sometimes if I'm in a silly mood, 10 times, just after the most joke that should not have music after it, right afterwards. So what whether I'm right.
Yeah, right.
And then or whether I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's great.
And it's just, it's very powerful. Like performing without the band, like the guy that opens up the show, the keyboard guy, like the lights go out. He doesn't just dilly dally with a song, 2 minute song. He shreds it. He sings it where the people are like, what the fuck just happened? You know, he can fucking sing.
Yeah.
And the band, and then it's boom, blackout.
Yeah.
And then it's like, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Todd Glass. And then I come out, you know,
follow
I
can, spot.
Yeah, foul spot. I come from the back of the room. Just, you know, I want to, you know, I know what, like, I even tell sometimes when we're backstage, I'll tell the band, hit your trumpet. Because I know what it's like when I go to see a musician and I hear something backstage. Oh, they're rehearsing. You heard someone blowing up. I go, just do that. Do it on purpose. Yeah, and then the people, oh, you hear it. They hear it.
Yeah.
So I just try to make it just a real experience that they're like just exhausted after the show. And then they get outside. It's like the band doesn't stop. When the whole band goes outside right after the show, they play for about 10 minutes out there while people are, you know, hitting the ice cream truck or getting hot chocolate to go.
What if it's cold?
Then we'll do a inside, like where
inside hot chocolate
or good. You know, there's ice cream companies that will come and then they'll just get out inside. Yeah.
So this is all one big moving towards one big production, a run in New York City.
Yeah. And it's all I want to do in my life. I want this to happen so bad. There's got to be. And by the way, if someone pays for the whole thing, I've been doing this 45 years. Maybe there's someone listening. You pay for the whole thing. And then
Pizza.
Then there can be a little bit of money.
Name the whole show after.
Oh,
that.
I'll name the band.
Yeah, I'll name the band.
My goal real quick
is... No, but you can name the show. Like Adidas presents Todd Glass.
Done. Done. I don't even go, well, that's a little selling out. Real quick, and I don't even know if this is important, Mark.
Yeah.
The goal is, this is why maybe some big benefactor who's proactive and trying to find something to get involved with is I don't want to ask my comedian friends for money. I don't want to go, hey, would you present me? But once we have the funding, I am going to approach some of them and go, can I use your name? So you know how normally it's one person, blah, 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 presents.
Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld presents Colin Quinn. I want to try to get five comedians that I would like their audience. You know what I mean? That's what I'm looking for, that I would be jealous of their audience and then have like boom, 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 on the marquee, present Todd Glass.
Yeah, but the problem with that is people look at the marquee and go, are they going to be there?
No, no, no. It's we thought, believe me, we thought about that and we changed it even in our mock-up.
Yeah.
They'll know. And if you pay for the whole thing, your name can go up there with them.
Yeah.
Even if you're, you know.
Now, let me just. Let's,
am I explaining this right?
Sure. It's a big show with music and variety and ice cream.
That's all I
want
to do. I want to do this till I die. I want this show to work.
So you want to tour with the show?
I want to tour with the show, do residency with the show. It's something to see. I know that sounds a little maybe too complicated.
Now, why, like, because I'm thinking, like, you know, how do you, like, film it? How do you tour it? Why not have guests?
Because I don't want to. I love doing, one of the best things about doing stand-up is that it's all you. And I like having the band bits, but I don't want guests. I don't want to rely on guests. I don't want to book guests. I just want to, I have a stand-up act. It's good. I've been doing it a long time. I still love it. I'm at the top of my game. And I have the band with me, and they're tight, and they know what I do. I don't want to have guests because I don't want to rely on guests. This show is good enough. I don't need guests.
You're not hosting. You're hosting yourself.
Right. Yeah. It's just me, you know. And maybe in New York I would have. You know, if there's some act like, you know, once, I might have an, I'm thinking maybe
why not musical guests?
I just don't.
Okay.
Because it can't be as tight.
Right.
You know, it can't be as tight. Every night there's something different. You know, my friend said to me, and I won't mention names. He goes, you know the problem when you have an act open up for you? He goes, sometimes I like to use a newer act because someone that's big might go out and dilly-dally. The whole show, my friend said, Todd, I'm sitting there. The opening show, the blackout. Todd, it's so fucking tight. And then if an opening act comes out, a more high-profile opening act, that you're like, oh, cool, to help me put people in, and they're not tight, it's like, it puts a little, it's not so, unless it's going to be like, you know, like a guy like Jim Gaffigan, like he's going to go out even on, and he's going to be tight. But you got, I might use a newer act. I might have an opening act every night in New York, but have it be like a much, much, much younger comic that's going to go out and do the best of every night.
Right. How long does the show run?
An hour and a half.
That's good.
It's an hour and a half. And what do I need? If I have the right budget behind it, I don't need opening acts. All those people are presenting me. I'm sure people are going to go, well, if they're all presenting him, you know, then there might be something here.
Sure.
You know? I have my wish list.
Yeah.
You'll be getting a call.
Get my name on that marquee.
Yeah.
Mark Maron's band.
Mark Maron's band. Oh, you know what? I figure like a guy like, you know, I'm going to do Bert Kreischer's podcast. I figure a guy like that, he's so emotional and react, you know, maybe his fans can start up a crowdsource called the Bert Kreischer band every night.
Yeah. Why not?
Maybe your fan, the Mark Maron band every single night. That's a price you pay, but it's
Bert
worth
got
it.
Mad at me. We had a thing. You know that?
I didn't.
Oh, it's okay.
I didn't. It's okay now.
I don't mean to bring it down. Well, yeah, I said something on a TikTok, and it was vague. So I was going to address this to you about, you know, when you talk in general about comedy, I was making general comment about a specific comic, and it wasn't Bert. And somebody, troublemaker, you know, made it about Bert, and then, you know, we had, you know, and he got upset and hurt his feelings, and he talked about it on a podcast.
You make fun of my Bert.
Yeah, and he, you know, he kind of blew me up on this podcast, and I just had to call him, and I'm like, dude, it wasn't about you, and I wouldn't have intention.
But you made good of it?
Yeah, but like it's still out there, and I don't think it's corrected, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, once that's out there, what are you going to do? But I did make it right with him, just like you and I did.
Good. That was very little.
Yeah.
You know what's funny with me and you? Because I know you're Mark Maron. You've left your, you know, you have, I hear, oh, by the way, silly, what you, oh, the fate, the look you just gave me was like, what do you, like, I thought it was safe to go. You've left a trail of,
do whatever you want.
Yeah, but you've left a trail of your being Mark Maron.
Yeah.
But me and you really have never had anything.
No.
We never had an issue. That night was that, hey, look, you could have had what happened at Sarah Silverman's party with anybody.
Well, that's why it hurt my feet. That's why it hurt me. Because I don't think I always know how I come off. And I don't think I always know, you know, like with this thing with Bert, which was like, it was just like a nightmare in the sense that sort of like, I have no ill intent. You know, I was being broadly critical. I was really talking about Chappelle was the dig. And, you know, because he's big enough to absorb it, maybe. But that's the fucking thing about this is that you can't talk, you know, even if someone's a big cultural icon, if he's one of us, you're going to have to deal with them at some point.
That's why sometimes because there's a lot of comedians, again, that I don't agree with them socially. Usually it's socially. I'm not, you know, or if they have a bad, 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 bad habit, like fake laughing during their jokes. Or
yeah.
But usually even comedians that I don't agree with them socially, I like them.
Sure. Exactly.
And by the way, I'm not talking about Bert.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Bert really never does the, you can't say anything anymore. He never does
that.
He's
a fun guy.
He doesn't entertain.
Yeah, he's a fun guy.
But what I'm talking about is, comedians over the years, even if I don't agree with them socially, I like comedians. They gave me a life. I could, you know, it's like,
yeah,
when I met comedians,
Yeah.
I thought, oh my God. Like, these are my people.
Yeah.
I knew it at 16 years old. That's why on the show, the keyboard guy goes, listen, when me and Todd first met, he goes, he felt the same way about when I met musicians about comedians.
Yeah.
And we bonded over that.
Yeah.
We had a life. And this song is to all the comedians that Todd's ever met. We opened the show with For Once in My Life, I Have Someone Who Needs Me. And he shreds it.
Yeah.
To all the comedians that I've met over the years.
Yeah.
And it's a true sort of, a thank you to them because they did give me a life. So I want to get along with comedians. I don't want to go to a party and see comedians that, you know,
don't like you.
That I said something or they don't like me, but overwhelmingly, I don't.
Yeah,
have that
I do too. That's why I've been doing the show. It all started with comedians, but it did start with me, trying to, mend some.
Right. Mend some pass. I got my eye on you. Don't try any shit.
With you?
Anybody.
I'm doing all right. I try not to, but sometimes I get a little cranky because I don't understand what's going on.
Are you happy?
I'm happy enough.
Are you seeing anybody?
Yeah.
You are?
Yep.
Okay. Do you have cats?
I have three cats still. I'm about to go out on the road, and I got this new hour. And with me, a week before I go out, I'm like, I don't have it. I'm doing like hour and a half shows. It's in there somewhere. But it's like, doing the road, like I'm not a tour bus guy. I'm a drive the rental car with the opener for hours.
That's so funny. I love the tour bus. I can't get enough of the tour bus.
Yeah, who do you go on tour buses
with? Well, granted,
with?
We're not on it with 20 band members. That's right. A little harder. But I'm going on a tour with Andy Frasco, by the way. I'll give him a shout out.
Andy who?
Andy Frasco is a pretty big musician, and I'm going on tour with him. It's his podcast, so we are going. Well, I don't know when this drops. But anyway, I've gone on the tour bus with, first tour bus I ever went on ever was with Mike Birbiglia years ago. That was like 4 days. But Gaffigan, I've been on a tour bus with Sarah Tosh, and there's three or four of us on the tour bus, so we have our own areas.
Yeah.
Someone can be in the back of the bus, can somebody in their bunk? Somebody can be. So I just love it. It's it's like if I get into bed at night. Now, if you can't sleep on a tour bus, I get it. Then it's not going to work for you. I totally understand that. But to me, it's like. All when you go into bed, it's like if you go to your hotel and you go to bed and the hotel starts up and drives 8 hours and you're at the next venue, it's no downtime. Even a private plane, which believe me, I'm lucky I get to do that sometimes, that's still you got to get up in the morning, go to the airport. It's 20 times easier. But the tour bus, especially when you're doing
you don't
it with
go to
style,
hotels?
We do. That's why when you do the tour bus right, we'll get up and Gaffigan likes to stay at night. Which I do too. I like to stay and go out to dinner. I like to enjoy the night.
Yeah.
But the way he does his tours, then we get up at 11, get on the tour bus. But when you're getting up at 11 to go on a tour bus, you can go back to bed if you want.
Yeah.
And then when you get to the next venue, maybe 4 hours later, five hours later, we do very short stints. And then we're checking a hotel there. So you get off the bus and get into the hotel. It's just a relaxing life to me. I would love to do a tour bus. I've never done a tour with my own bus.
Yeah, me neither. I don't even think about it.
And you don't even think about it?
No.
Nothing attractive about it to you?
It just seems like a bit much. Like, I rent a car and I drive it.
Right.
Usually with the opener. Drive 3-4 hours sometimes and then, do the same thing. But it's not a tour bus. It's just a car and I can't sleep because I'm driving.
Well, I guess it's whatever you, if you like that, then I would understand
I don't
that.
Know if I like it, but it doesn't seem cost effective for me to get a tour bus. To do, 500 to 800 seaters, it probably costs some money, right?
Right, it does. It's they do cost you. I think that to get the nicest one you're talking about with the driver, because he has to get a hotel, because he sleeps during the day.
Yeah.
He sleeps during the day. But I think it's you can get one for $1,800, but I think about $3,500 is the cost
a
of
day.
A tour bus a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not terrible.
No. I did it with Tosh. We had two tour buses.
Yeah.
He was on with his wife and one of the writers from the show and his tour manager, and then I was in the back with just the three comedians.
Yeah.
And we had, from day one, we did 30 days straight. We only had one night off without a show.
Yeah.
And I loved every single second.
I guess that's also, too, that if you do, I go out, I do 3-4 dates, come back. Few days, go out, do 2-4 dates. And then sometimes I'll just take a week or two off. I don't like to do the every night thing. And I don't know that, my audience is that broad. I'll do 25-30 dates spread out over a few months. But some guys do 50 dates. I'm like, I don't know if I could do 50 dates.
I could on a tour bus. But, yeah, I do what you do.
I just don't know if I could draw to do 50 dates.
Well, that's the difference. Some people don't need a tour bus. They don't, you know, they're not trying to get to the next venue.
I did it. I'm doing this joke that I came up with the other night where it's sort of like, look, you know, I could do an arena, one arena, you know, probably in the center of the country. Then I'd have to bus people in from all over.
You do it. You do the opposite. Yeah, well, I don't have a tour bus, but I'm touring. I'm getting everybody else.
I do one arena, and they're going to be in the parking lot of Walmart in Pittsburgh. They're loading up. You know,
that's too funny.
But that'd be the dream for you, to take this show with your guys on a tour bus and do 20, 25 dates.
Yeah, I would love every second of it. You know, someone told Tosh, oh, he did 60 days straight.
Yeah.
And they go, you're not going to like it. And I go, Daniel, I think you are. He goes, so do I. At the end of the tour, I wasn't with him on that tour. He goes, yeah, I loved it. He's just, everything is so organized and so.
Got a road manager.
You got a road manager, the best road manager. You
got a merch
guy. Got everything.
Yeah.
Got everything. It's fun for me.
How's Tosh doing?
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's enjoying life.
I haven't seen or heard from him in a long time.
He just started a new, I guess it's a podcast, but like a video podcast with, you know, but it's like, it's a show. You know, these days you call it a podcast. He's got a show.
Yeah.
And it's him. He gets it's the old Tosh that people like, but it's also another side of Tosh that maybe no one's seen, the mix together. It's great.
Do you talk about like your life in the show?
I do.
Yeah.
I do talk about my life. And matter of fact, somebody asked me a good question. You know, when I came out, so someone said, "Don't worry, it won't be your identity because it's not who you won't make it your identity."
Right.
But it is a part of my life.
Yeah.
And my brother goes, I think it was my brother, but it was a good question. He goes, "When do you think you're just going to talk about being gay casually, not like, well, here's the process I came out."
Right.
You know, instead of just like, you know, hey, well, you know, my boyfriend, we did this.
Yeah.
And I go, that's a good question. So now to bridge that gap to that happening, I talk about that. I go, you know, my brother asked me, when are you go? I go, it's hard. You know, it takes that stuff. That
you can just say partner too and make it in and then ease into it.
Yeah, I could say partner I used to have a joke about partner in crime. What's your crime? We disobey God. A fake God. Now I'm trying to get to the point. But I do talk about it, and I'm glad that I do.
Because I'm picturing, like, I don't know how the whole show goes, but it seems like it's sort of set up to where, you know, you could change the music and do kind of a reflective thing if you wanted to.
I do sometimes. I do. With the band there's so many opportunities. But, you know, there's other ways you can be honest on stage, too. Besides, that is one truth that I brought to the stage that I didn't. But just, you know, overwhelmingly, just doing comedy.
Even
so
you're talking about your mom or whatever.
Like, I do. I do. It's funny because I said, I think you'll find this funny. I should preface it by, my mom was an amazing person. She was a lot to celebrate. But like a lot of people deal with this. I'm not saying this to be disrespectful to my mom, but it's just the truth. Because of some of her topical behavior, she caused chaos a lot, whatever the reason was. So it was hard to celebrate her because she was always. Now that my mom is gone, not that I would wish that she was gone, but life is a little easier. And one thing, this leads to something funny, that life is a little easier, and it's so much easier to celebrate her. And I do all the time. I lay in bed and I'll just cry thinking of my mom, the things she did. She got very little and gave us so, so much. But that doesn't mean that she still didn't cause a lot of problems. So whenever my friends mention their moms, I always go, oh, you know, they complain about their mom. And I'm kidding. People have a right. I go, you and your mom's dead. You're going to miss her so much. My friend Daniel Keener goes, I know. She tells me that every time I talk to her. I go, what do you tell her? He goes, I don't know, Mom. Todd said his mom died, and it's the best thing that ever happened to him. And which is a little out of context, but it's just so.
It's funny. I'm trying to make a joke that I can't get to work, where I say, you know, you get older, you have a family, and no one ever tells you just how much it's going to cost to put two parents through dying.
Instead of college.
Right. And I go, and you don't get anything back from it. Just the satisfaction that they graduated.
They graduated,
you know?
to the other side.
Right.
Oh, that's so funny. No one talked about how much it was to put your
parents. Two parents through dying.
My mom, the good thing is, and I'm glad it happened. It just happened so quick. Yeah. It really did. Like I have messages. You know, my dad, I had one message and I erased it. I don't know why. I was 22 when he died, and maybe I didn't know how much I'd want to hear his voice. My mom, I started saving her messages and playing them on the podcast.
Yeah.
A week before she died, I have messages. I want to bring my new friends to the show.
Yeah.
She was planning on coming to the show. And then, you know, I went home as soon as I found out my brother called me. He goes, Todd, because she found out, she called me in the hospital. She goes, Todd, the cancer's back. And I was doing way back. Yeah, and they were sending her home for hospice.
Yeah.
You know, now you're off some of the medications, so it happens quick.
Right.
And, you know, I went home, and we were all there, and the dogs were in bed with her. But, you know, I said some things. I go, Todd, I did. I told her, Mom, squeeze my hand.
Yeah.
And she squeezed it. And I go, squeeze it again. And then she squeezed it again. And I go, Mom, don't kill me, but squeeze it one more time. And she went, squeeze, squeeze, squeeze.
Yeah.
And I go, you got her ear. Not like, well, I'd like to believe she was listening. That's special, too, if that's all you had.
Oh,
you
so she was know. Out of it.
She,
and you were-
but she knew. She heard me. And I, oh, my God, it was so hard. But I just said, you did, Mom, I know. I wanted to be realistic, even in the final hours of her life. And I said, I know that there was a lot of drama with the family in the last year, but Mom, you did such a fucking good job.
Oh yeah,
you know. And I just said it, and I just, you know, I sat and I didn't think I had this. I was affectionate with my mom, but I was feeding her sherbet and rubbing her head. I didn't know if you know had that type of affection in me with my mom. It's a little hard. And then I fed her sherbet and I rubbed her head and just you know, was there, and you know, it went pretty quick. My stepdad handled it beautifully. He was heavy on the morphine, which we were hoping he would be. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
Don't keep her around for us.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, one sort of funny thing that happened is she would remember people when they came into the room, and the next day after I got home, I got the last little bit out of her. The first day I got home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The next day she was not out of it. And this one guy she sort of has a crush on. Everyone in her building was much younger, like they were like 20 to 30, and they all loved her and her husband. So one guy came in and she lifted her head. Matt, a really good looking guy. She goes, Matt, you showed up. I'm like, Matt, get the fuck out of here. You just got a bigger reaction than me. But I said it. And I'm glad that I did.
You got closure. You said everything you wanted to. You had the time. You were there for her.
I said it. I told stories about her. And I could see whenever I told a story, she'd smile. Oh, I rubbed her head. And
that's
it
nice.
Was, yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That, you know, you're not in that situation going like, Mom, tell me what you want me to do with the silver.
we joke, like we said, my friend that's a therapist goes, you don't want to be just laughing, you don't want to be just crying, you're doing it right, do the mix, you don't have to be afraid to. And I went on stage, I did my comedy 3 days later at a club that she had been to every single year since they opened, Helium in Philly. The staff, everybody was just, man, sometimes people remind you how decent they can be as a species, and it really melts your heart. It really does.
I think that's true, and sometimes it's hard to find those moments, but you know, they show up when they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with this project.
Thank you, and I appreciate you having me on. And such, you know, I called you like 2 weeks ago. You're like, yeah, come on.
Of course.
So Seed and Spark, give them a shout out. Give the triplets. I want the triplets. They're on TikTok. They're three triplets. I can't get enough of these fucking guys. I want them on my podcast. I figure if I give them a shout out, they would. Also, Netflix special coming out. It's on Netflix. It's coming out in May. Wanda Sykes is one of the executive producers, and it was an amazing experience.
Who's on that?
It's a lot of people. It's half stand-up, half documentary, like talking about me before I, you know, talking about the process of coming on your show.
Yeah.
And there you go. Did I get everything?
How does that work? They just go to Seed and Spark?
They can go to my website. It's the easiest thing for them to remember, and that'll take them right there.
Todd Glass.
ToddGlass.com.
Yeah.
But Seed and Spark is the platform that we did it on, and really glad we did. They're pretty awesome. And then, yeah, go look at there's options. You know, you pay this, you get that. You pay this, you pay that. Pay the whole thing, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
So there we go. So thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Todd. Great to see you.
I love you.
Love you, too. There you go. Wow. That's pretty good. Nonstop, right? Todd Glass, The Event of a Lifetime is happening on May 12th at the UCB Theater in Los Angeles. Go to toddglass.com to see a trailer of the show and find out how you can help make future performances happen. Okay, hang out for a minute, folks. Hey, we've got a blast from the past on the Full Marin this week. You can hear some of my interviews from nearly 20 years ago on my old radio show with Eli Wallach, Nora Ephron, and Charles Barkley.
Racism is always there.
Right.
It's always there. If you watch television every day, you read the newspaper every day, there's some type of racial incident that happens. So it always comes into play.
But in the same way that you're saying that the Nielsen ratings don't represent the black community because there aren't black people that have these boxes, that maybe the unspoken voice of the black community could eventually, you know, transcend the racism in this country. You don't believe that to be true?
No, I don't think. I think it's been too ingrained in our psyche.
Subscribe to The Full Marin to get bonus episodes twice a week and every episode of WTF ad-free. Go to the link in the episode description to sign up or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And just a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Guitar time.
Monkey and LaFondick had angels everywhere.